Hey guys, my name is Alex, and you're listening to the Thousand Movie Project podcast. The sound quality is going to be a little different for like the first 10 seconds. This episode started out with what turned into like a garbled bit of audio of my describing how, even though I was raised in a predominantly Cuban household, it was different from the household of my Cuban friends because it was neither spiritual nor were there any superstitions. Never went to church. Never put horseshoes on anything or glasses of water under the bed when we were having bad dreams. And as a result of that, I think, I'm now, as an adult, neither spiritual nor superstitious. So that was basically what I was trying to say. The audio was garbled, and it led into me saying this.
The superstitious thing, a little bit, yeah. If I'm already worried about something and I'm walking around outside and I make eye contact with a black cat, I get a little bit uneasy. I do believe, again, absentmindedly, that like it's bad luck to toast someone's alcoholic beverage with a glass of water. I do kind of believe that anal sex will make you deaf. But as someone pointed out to me a while ago, most of the behaviors around which superstitions accrue in a culture, they're actually safety-oriented. The superstitions that have been passed down with time are more like PSAs that the elders of various communities would promulgate because it was an effective way of getting people to not do stupid, reckless shit. Walking under a ladder, for instance, is widely held to be an invitation to misfortune, like that you're condemning yourself to bad luck. And so you'll hear people say, like, whoa, watch out for that ladder. Wouldn't want to lose your chance at that promotion. And that's cool. You're welcome to believe that. But it's also worth pointing out that part of the reason we might have a superstition about how it's bad luck to walk underneath a ladder is because it's also fucking just dangerous to walk underneath a ladder. Like, it is existentially threatening. Here's a little bit of trivia. I don't know if it's true. I heard it. If a person falls from a height of more than double their body height, they've got a 50-50 chance of surviving. So if you're 6 feet tall and you fall from a height of 12 feet, odds are 50-50 that you're gonna die. Now imagine, what are the odds of your survival if something falls from twice your height onto your head? And the reason that this kind of safety wisdom would be spread in that fashion is because you're not gonna change anyone's behavior if you just go around town like a schoolmarm, like wagging your finger and telling people not to walk underneath ladders for the, you know, oh, it's dangerous, they better do what you tell them. People aren't really receptive to that kind of approach. If you go around talking to people like that, they're gonna make a point of walking underneath more ladders. Like, consider the frequency with which someone on the internet will say, oh, I adhere to a vegan diet because I don't think it's cool that cows get tortured. Invariably, someone or many someones in the comments section will say, I'm gonna eat two cows. Same thing, if you tell people, hey, you're gonna get hurt if you walk under that ladder, they're gonna pointedly walk under that ladder and then the next one and the next one just to make a point about how you're not the fucking boss of them, that you can't tell them what to do. But if, on the other hand, you politely affirm for them their freedom to walk under that ladder, any ladder they please, but then just, you know, you kind of drop it in as an observation that you knew this one guy and he walked under a ladder one time, and then, like, right away, he just started sneezing until he died. And this other guy, I knew him too, he walked under a ladder, and from then on, everything he bit into for the rest of his life was full of ketchup. People are way more receptive to that kind of danger. I think especially in America, our paradoxically collectivist obsession with individuality, everybody in a red cap telling you that you need to do your own research and not be one of those fucking left-wing sheep. Oh, the virus is contagious. Where'd you hear that? A book? The Cuban thing is different. I think the Cuban superstitions sprout largely from, like, the rampant Catholicism, but also, if you want to get wonky about it, there's been some janky spiritual shit going on in Cuba for centuries, because during the slave trade, the Spaniards, the fucking Spaniards, with their mustaches and their bad dances and their speech impediment, they would go to Jamaica, they would gather up 300 people, and they would say, hey, you want to get on this ship and come to this island with us, we'll do 3 months of labor, and then we'll bring you back. So 300 Jamaicans, they would get on the ship, they would be brought to Cuba, and then just nobody would ever take them home. And then the Spaniards would do the same fucking thing in Haiti. They would get 300 people from the island, like, hey, want to come over to our place for 3 months, do some labor, earn some money, we'll bring you right back. 300 people said sure, and then they never caught a ride back. No one ever offered one. Now you've got 600 people on the island from different Caribbean nations and cultures. Suddenly they're stranded on this Caribbean nation with this Caribbean culture, and now all of their belief systems become intermingled, and vestiges of that spiritual stew of Jamaican traditions and Haitian traditions and native Cuban traditions, Taino beliefs, fucking Catholicism, whatever. Vestiges of that big stew have just gotten swirlier and swirlier and grayer, and they've trickled down into a modern era where grandmothers are insisting, for instance, that if you leave your purse on the floor, your money will run away. That superstition is a way of telling people not to set themselves up for getting robbed. Don't leave your purse on the floor because either you'll trip on it and get injured, or more likely, someone will steal it. Telling people not to step on a crack because it'll bring bad luck. That is really a circuitous way of ensuring that people will watch where they're going. Tell people that breaking a mirror or breaking a glass is going to cause 7 years of bad luck kind of ensures that people will be a little more cautious when they're handling something fragile and sharp. If you tell people that crossing paths with a black cat is dangerous, if they're alone, that's cool because cats are very hostile, violent things, and you don't want people crossing in the path of cats. I forgot to tell you, I spoke with Jonathan Franzen a few weeks ago. We traded emails over the course of several days. Franzen is one of my all-time favorite novelists ever since college. I wanted to have him on the show to talk about a nonfiction piece that he had just published in The New Yorker about some initiative, I think it might have been in San Francisco, but he went riding along with these women who work for an organization that goes into the suburbs late at night and they put out traps to collect stray cats. And then they take those cats to an overnight clinic where they are spayed or neutered. And then the next day, they're taken back where they were found and released. Apparently the overpopulation issue is coming to a head. But I asked him if he would come on the podcast to discuss it. And he was like, it's a delicate issue. I get a lot of heat whenever I talk about the cat versus bird thing in public, which is true, like weirdly true. Jonathan Franzen is a longtime bird watcher, and he wrote a piece a couple years ago pointing out that the biggest danger to the American bird population is not climate change, which had become kind of a popular misconception. The biggest danger to American birds is cats. Just fucking cats, who for sport, not even for food, kill something like 1 billion songbirds a year. When that piece came out, I think in The New Yorker, or maybe it was The Atlantic, Franzen got dragged on Twitter for being a climate change denier, and he was like, I did it. I'm not saying climate change isn't happening, I'm saying that cats are more dangerous than climate change. Okay, but the reason I brought up superstitions is because I'm turning 33 this week, Wednesday, April 24th, and one thing I am a little bit superstitious about is that number. Not 33, but 24. My birthday is 4/24/91, and I have this weird habit. I think a lot of people have some version of this experience and they keep it to themselves, but 4/24 is like my number, and I always look at the clock at 4/24. There have just been a million times over the course of my life where I was the 24th in line, or my access number was 24, or my locker number was 24. I'm sure this is just the brain's reflexive quest for symmetry and patterns. And this year, my birthday is 4/24/24. In these final 48 hours of being 32, I'm standing in the aftermath of two massive, life-changing failures last year, like between the ages of 31 and 32. And they weren't entirely my fault. They weren't really entirely anyone's fault. It was kind of a luck of the draw thing. So there's no basis for resentment toward anybody. It was just, I took a shot at something. It seemed to be promising, and then it fell apart. I've always basically known what I want, like big picture wise. And for the past couple of years, I've had this burgeoning sense of how to get it. But this moment right now, on the cusp of 4/24/24, it feels like the first time in my life that I'm confident in my ability to get it. Over the past 2 or 3 years specifically, when obviously this is almost entirely attributable to living with Marie, I've gotten a more refined sense of how to make up for my own shortcomings, how to just like put my best foot forward on something, and how to do things consistently. And I know I'm resigned to the fact that I won't be remarkable at everything that I do, and I've completed so many things, and then I've put them out to the gatekeepers and like failed to pass through those gates. But I'm becoming increasingly appreciative of having gotten those things done, and it has instilled a certainty about my ability to continue to get things done. One example of that is not only doing the podcast more consistently, but also, if you'd like to see a fresher version of that burgeoning can-do attitude, you can check out my Ko-fi or Ko-fi page at ko-fi.com/thousandmoviepod, and you can download a sample of the ebook that I'm working on. It's nonfiction, it's a very long kind of personal essay. And up there on Ko-fi or Ko-fi, It is pay what you want. You can get it for free, or a dollar, or five, or ten. The point is, I made something, I'm in the process of completing it, and I feel good about having gotten as far as I've gotten. And I'm just moving past this idea of wanting to conceal things, like completing a project and then wanting to conceal it so I can get it into the hands of gatekeepers, whether it's agents or publishers or editors. But the making of the thing, the sharing of the thing, is its own kind of reward. And beginning for 2424, at the age of 33, is the year when I think I can prove to myself that this kind of thing, the pursuit of the project, the completion of the project, is itself not only a reward, but a possible vocation that it might in fact be sustainable. Which I know on the surface sounds pretty superstitious, but I'm really starting to believe it.